What's good? What's good? I'm back. Yours truly, one and only Paul Pickett, host of the Paul Pickett Podcast, a.k.a. Triple P, a.k.a. the Common Sense Podcast, your source for music, sports, politics, world events, and much, much more. Today, I'm going to react to a video of Patrick Bet-David and the crew reacting to Elon Musk claiming civilization is over if Ukraine doesn't give in to Russia. But before we do, like always, let's give you a word from our sponsors.
That lit, that, lit, that slap, it is that one, that hey, egg bite talking about this new drink. They like, that's that turn, that lit, that slap, it is that one, that hey, egg bite talking about this new drink. They like,
they like, do you dizzle? Yes, I dizzle. Check out Dizzle Premium Luxury Liqueur, mixture of agave tequila, French cognac, and orange liquor mango mix. Just throw your dizzle on ice, and it's nice. Go to dizzlebrand.com, click on our locations, and you can order your very own bottle or bottles of Dizzle Premium Luxury Liqueur. Must be 21 and over. Shipping and handling is included. Also, below that is locations in California, Oklahoma, Kansas, and Arkansas, 50 locations in Arkansas as we speak, coming soon to a city or state near you. So let's get into it and hear what the guys have to say.
Civilization is over if Ukraine doesn't give in to Russia, okay? Self-proclaimed political expert Elon Musk, obviously that comment means they like him a lot, has issued a stark warning to Ukraine as Russia's invasion countries continues. Using Twitter, the platform he is likely to soon own and control, the world's richest man made a number of eyebrow-raising predictions for eventualities regarding the outcome of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. If Russia is faced with the choice of losing Crimea or using battlefield nukes, they will choose the latter. The SpaceX and Tesla CEO tweeted, "The West has already sanctioned, cut off Russia in every possible way. So what more do they have left to lose? If we nuke Russia back, they will nuke us, and then we have World War III." In short, Musk is arguing that Ukraine should give in to Russia's demand, or else a highly controversial perspective that has already landed him in hot water recently. Last week, he announced SpaceX will no longer supply Starlink internet satellite tech to Ukraine, a decision he reversed 2 days later. They're not saying why. One of their diplomats, one of their leaders told him to go F off. That's why he just canceled it. But When you hear, you know, the experience and the lack of proper decision making in Afghanistan that you second guessed, and a lot of people also second guess, you're not alone there. And then we have this going on right now where a guy like Elon Musk is commenting. How do you, what do you think about what Elon said, and what do you think about the way we've been handling Russia and Ukraine?
Yeah, so two very different questions. So first of all, Crimea, I mean, Russia annexed that way before the current conflict that we're having here. So I think Musk's comments was they've already annexed Crimea, just acknowledge, give them that. But then there's still a whole bunch of contested area right now in the eastern portion of Ukraine. And so ultimately what Musk is advocating for is some concessions by Ukraine. And, you know, the Ukrainians are been operating the way they have for the last 60-ish years, and they don't want to go back to Russia-controlled territory. I don't know. It's complicated. So I would say my opinion is that the United States a lot of times can't get out of its own way and makes matters worse. And so I'm not sure that the billions and billions of dollars that we've given Ukraine was the best return on investment. I think in a lot of ways it probably cripples our European allies who should be doing the same thing. I mean, there's no better example of a pacified culture than the Germans. And the Germans are right there and should really, in my opinion, be doing a lot more. How this ends, I'm not sure. I think people are getting a little too hysterical about Vladimir Putin not being a rational human being. I don't know if I agree with that assessment. I understand why he did what he did with the advancement of NATO, but I do believe it was a strategic mistake. I do believe he has old KGB thinking, and so, you know, his old style of thinking is more land equals more power, and that's just not true in today's world. Today, it's controlling the beliefs of the people is the ultimate power. And if by going for more land, he polarizes all the beliefs of the people, he's actually degraded a lot of his power. I mean, look no further than Sweden and Norway to look at his strategic failures. So really what we're arguing about is some border region areas, and I don't know how that'll play out, but I'm not convinced that Vladimir Putin is not rational, and I'm also not convinced that we should be giving as much money to Ukraine as we are.
What's the likelihood, you think, of this thing getting ugly the way Elon says, if we make a couple?
Before next person talks, I agree with some of what he says. We definitely shouldn't be giving so much money to Ukraine. I don't believe that, like, Vladimir Putin is a madman like Hitler or something like they claim. I mean, because, you know, for a long time, you know, Russia hasn't been at war. And we tried to bring NATO to his backyard. That's the thing. We're a little hypocritical on this. Like he said, we kind of get in our way with this because we made matters worse because we're hypocritical about this. Cuban missile crisis. What was that? Oh, us going batshit crazy because Russia was going to put nukes in our backyard. Well, that's what NATO pretty much does. It brings democracy into their backyard of communists. Like, we got to stop being hypocritical about this because we do try to convert everybody to a democracy, like, you know, like it's Christianity or Islam. So let's keep it moving. Keep it moving, keep it moving, keep it moving, huh? Come on, video play for me. What's going on here?
What's the likelihood, you think, of this thing getting ugly the way Elon says, if we make a couple bad moves, this guy goes first, we retaliate, it can turn into a World War III? What's the likelihood of that?
I think it comes back to the beliefs of the people. And so I think people in America often want to project Russians as these evil people. Russians are
They do.
Very much like us, white Christian European type people. Like if you actually hang out with a Russian, they are very kind to Americans and like Americans, right? If I went into a Muslim country like Iran, they would not be as kind and they would have a different belief system. Same thing with the Chinese. And so I guess I'm just not convinced that the Russian people are going to allow it to happen. But, you know, crazier things have happened. Is it a threat that we should be worried about? Absolutely. But Elon Musk projecting that Vladimir Putin is completely irrational, therefore we must concede certain things, I think is maybe a stretch.
Did you hear the rumor that came out, Tyler, last week that they're saying Musk had a conversation with Putin?
Yeah, I've heard that briefly.
Did you hear about that this last week? Wait, Elon Musk had a conversation with Putin, you know, an article saying, did Elon Musk speak with Vladimir Putin? I don't know if, can you zoom in a little bit?
He's now repeating a Putin talking point. He's a Putin asset because the guy doesn't want to do anything to piss off.
Let me read this story from 1945 that just came out a couple days ago. Biden's Ukraine strategy could start a nuclear war with Russia. What too many of our current leaders and enthusiastic in Washington hawks somehow fail to recognize, however, is that unlike all our military opponents of the past several decades, Russia's possession of nuclear weapons means they can, in a moment of desperation of fear, initiate a nuclear war that could quite literally wipe the United States out of existence. Obviously, that's hard exaggeration, but you know, this is what the writer is saying. This should not be hard to understand. If the U.S. and NATO finally provide enough firepower, intelligence, and training to Ukrainian troops that will enable them to physically drive Russian forces completely out of Ukraine territories, especially the highly charged emotional areas of Donbas and Crimea, Putin will be forced into a corner where he has to choose between allowing his entire force to be completely defeated or escalate to use of nuclear weapons. What do you think about what this article says?
Yeah, I mean, that's a theory. I'm obviously not Vladimir Putin, but I don't know if I agree. There's a way, I think, for him to save face without giving him all of the Donbass area. I mean, I'm not a geography major. I've looked at it on a map. Seems to be a pretty big area. I mean, he already has Crimea. And I think, quite honestly, we've already defeated him strategically. Like, even if he comes out of this with parts of the Donbass, I don't know if he sees it as a victory. So, like, let's define that. What is victory and what is complete defeat for him? I mean, I don't know. I would submit holding on to Crimea might not be a complete defeat. And there's probably ways where we could come to the table and make it not look like he completely got defeated. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, I think that's the real question, right? I
mean, right, exactly.
What do you do for him to save face? Because this is not a regular guy that's, you know, he cannot be publicly offended.
Yeah.
And that's what it's looking like. Tom, history, you've followed stories like this for a while. What do you think is the proper way to do something here where at least you please him, but also at the same time, you're not doing something where you're giving him everything he wants?
Well, I think there's a lot of examples of this that happen in the resolutions of the Arab-Israeli wars. When you go back and take a look, like when Egypt came across Suez Canal and then occupied West Bank. And remember what happened was the Israelis pushed them all the way back into the canal, over the canal, and then took part of Egypt's land on the other side. And what you had to do here is Israel is like, I'm not giving back the land on the other side of the canal because now I have a buffer against a known demonstrated aggressor, and so I'm going to extend the buffer here. And there was negotiations that had to take place to make it literally a demilitarized zone, that Israel only would accept policing that was 100% demilitarized by Egyptian forces, and you had to give Anwar Sadat, even though he was the aggressor, a face-saving. Otherwise, the people, these Egyptian people that just at their core of their heart hate Israel, you know, we're not going to be happy and they're going to be rioting. So you had to balance both things for the ego of the leader as well as the response of the people. And I think that's exactly the delicate thing that had to happen here. And the West had to whisper to Israel and say, listen, you took it back fair and square. They came across and you literally kicked the crap out of them for 7 days with U.S. equipment. You're nodding. You know the history.
I do.
Let me pause for a second. The more I listen, it just seems like a complex situation. It doesn't seem as easy as negotiating an NBA contract or NFL contract with incentives or whatever. Because, like I said, we don't know what is a victory to him. We really don't know. I don't know, like, if we know, like, what his whole demands are, you know? And I still think it's kind of hypocritical in this, you know, let's not act like Ukraine is not some sex trafficking country themselves. They don't got a lot of fucked up shit going on there. It ain't all peaches and cream there. I mean, I would think a communist would be threatened when you bring, or feel threatened when you bring democracy to their back door or to their borders, you know, because communists don't want to be, they don't want democracy, and democracy doesn't want communism. So it's going to be an ongoing battle. To me, that's what this is, a battle between democracy and communism. Ukraine trying to come into the fold. It almost reminds me of like American history when Texas had to fight Mexico for to be separate from Mexico, and the United States kind of wanted Texas to win the war, but they didn't necessarily want them to be a part of the United States right away, you know. So, and that's because Texas was a pro-slavery state at that time. So the United States was like, oh, we want you to win, but we don't really want you to come into the fold. It's kind of a hypocritical stance, to be honest, to take and whatnot, you know. And I don't remember who was president then. I want to say it was Andrew Jackson. When Texas first started, like, fighting Mexico for their independence. And that's why Texas has always been kind of like its own country, you know, because they literally fought for their independence from Mexico, and the United States didn't really like want them to be part of the club. And then it probably wasn't until they discovered oil or something or the resources in Texas that they decided to bring them on board. But that's what kind of reminds me of, like, the United States, you know, like, kind of, they want Ukraine to win, and, you know, and if they win, then, yeah, we want you to come part of NATO and join forces of NATO. Because at first it seems like the process was slowed up. Like, somebody didn't want Ukraine to be part of NATO. Either Ukraine didn't want you to be part of NATO, or NATO didn't necessarily want Ukraine to just join right away. But that reminds me of Texas fighting for independence and the war against Mexico, because Mexico pretty much had they owned California and Texas at one point. So, yeah, it's a complex situation. I agree with old boy. Like, people act like Putin is this just madman, you know, like, there's crazier people around the world than Putin. There's crazier people in Vietnam and probably North Korea and China, what's going on with the Uyghurs. And like old boy said, if you go to, like, these Arabic countries, you go to Afghanistan, they're chopping off your heads and your limbs, and Iran ain't too friendly. Like, Arabic countries, a lot of those aren't too friendly to Western civilization. Russia's not so, they're a little bit more friendly to Western civilization than a lot of other countries, man. They really are. They really are. But, oh man, I don't know where this leads. This seems like it's going to drag out as long as it can. I don't see Putin calling it quits, giving it up. I don't see him giving up. And there's no way Russia can give up to little old Ukraine. The optics itself looks bad. If Russia loses this war to Ukraine, then it's going to be more than just those sanctions that we've put on them. We're gonna put way more sanctions on them. Why, you know, they're weak. Because that's what we're going to look. We're going to look at them as weak, a wounded animal, cornered. And that ain't always good. Try to corner a lion or a tiger or a bear while it's wounded. Oh, my. You might die. So we got to be careful. We got to be careful with this situation. We got to be very careful. I think I might agree with Elon that, like, Ukraine might want to, let's see, like, what totally is going to stop this war. If it's giving up just parts of Ukraine, you might want to give them up. If you got to give up all of Ukraine, I mean, that could be a different story. That could be a different story, you know. Even here in the U.S., we're going to have parts of certain states that are trying to separate themselves from the state, because I think it's already going on in Oregon, if I'm not mistaken, or Utah. Oregon or Utah, one of those two states. So, yeah. And let me see. Let's get a little bit more into this, see what else they had to say real quick, if there was anything else important. See what else they might have to say about this.
You took it back fair and square. They came across and you literally kicked the crap out of them for 7 days with U.S. equipment. You're nodding. You know the history.
I do.
And then they came back and they said, okay, we're going to come back across, but this will now be a completely demilitarized zone. There can be no Egyptians that are armed in the area, but they can police it up to the old border. So the old border was restored, but without presence of any military assets, which is what the only thing that the Israelis would allow. There can be no military assets there because you've demonstrated what you do with them. And so it saved face for Sadat. It saved the people, being the militant part of the people, from being in open conflict the way they are constantly now. It, you know, on the other side of Jerusalem, where you have the three territories that are never at peace. And I think that's exactly what has to happen here.
And that's another thing I heard you say. These territories are never at peace.
Find a way for him to save face, maybe let him keep Crimea, and then pull back on this, because you've got this leader, and it's happened before in history. We have rational people around the world can come together to make to defuse what could be a second bomb.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask a question? Historically, what have been the moments where a person who played the role of a diplomat or somebody that just was a unifier that held a meeting between in the middle of war, that held a meeting between two of the hated leaders or presidents or prime ministers come together? Historically, how often has that happened?
You think of people like Kissinger, you know, who was U.S., but he was seen as this. He was really seen as a old school, you know, ambassadorial light touch diplomat. Mm-hmm. He was our guy and he was U.S., but he was able.
Fair enough. It's crazy. We don't know how this is going to go. I do think the media always makes matters worse. They pump false narratives. They pump fear into the hearts of people and the minds of people. They over embellish, over exaggerate, plain out lies sometimes. Sometimes, actually, a lot of times. You know, so I think the media makes things worse, and just too many opinions and no facts makes things worse. Once again, I want to thank y'all for tuning in. Paul Pickett Podcast. It's another episode, and I'm out.